Thank you for joining me today, everyone. I hope you're ready for a rather interesting adventure that we're going to go on together to experience something really quite unique. A brief period of intense experience awaits us all on the other side of the dreamscape today, as we find out what it's like to become something more than human, something powerful. So, why don't we get started? And I would say the best place to get started is to, of course, recall, recount, and recreate the same experience that we always reliably call upon to create those experiences with which we transport ourselves between realms and realities. That state of hyperfixation and focus. That wonderful and all too familiar space that we like to go to. Trance. Simple, easy, uncomplicated. Just following along. After all, I can guide you for a little while. You don't need to think about much of anything. And if any thoughts do happen to come, well, tumbling in or bubbling up, that's alright. You can just let them go. You can accept that they're here. They're part of the experience. But they're not the focus. They're not what we're doing right now, and there's nothing wrong with having them. If they happen to pass by, if they happen to come up, that's okay. The same thing again with our bodies is an important aspect of this experience. We need to remind ourselves that it's all right to adjust, it's all right to move and shift, to stay comfortable at any point. Because anything that supports your ability to listen, anything that supports that ability to experience that which we are setting out to do, is exactly what we want. And therefore, if any of those things should be needful, then do them. Adjust, shift, breathe, relax. Think, even. But return, guided by this thread. Guided by my words and my voice. Because that's the unifying aspect here. The focus, the fixation, all comes back to that. The relaxation, the learning, the listening. It's all a part of that experience. Feels good, doesn't it, to remember how wonderful it can be to listen, to slip into that state of fixation and focus. Repeating, recounting, recreating, learning. You do it each time so powerfully. Before you know it, you've done it. And if you're still learning, it's something you can grow more and more skilled at with each and every passing attempt. Because they reinforce the last, they build upon what we have traversed before, and they create more and more with each passing second, allowing you to slip into a state of mind that is wonderfully relaxed, but also extremely attentive. Trance manifests itself in many different ways inside of our minds. For each one of us, it's different. But one thing, one aspect is definitely unifying. It's a state in which our realities can be shaped in different ways, can take on new forms and new ways of being. And we can all come to enjoy that experience. So, with that in mind, just sink. Sink into my voice. Feel it swell up around you like a gentle, soft billow of clouds. Feeling the pressure swelling up and over you, of my voice, all around you, inside of you, in and out, consuming all. Thoughts can just turn, they can fall away, pushed out by this pressure as we float up into the dreamscape, so we find our ideas and minds suspended away from reality before we realized it, before we thought it could occur. It's already happened, with such gentle, irresistible force, lifted. Departing, pushed beyond where we were originally. It's delightful sometimes to just feel so helplessly carried along by something, by an experience. It's akin to the sensation we get when a process has begun, but we cannot stop, the same feeling one might have when you decide to go and take a slide as your body goes past that point where the center of mass is out and over the edge, and you're going, and there's no stopping. But you know that at the other end, you will be deposited safely back onto the ground, but for a brief while, Your body can feel the intensity and the sensation of falling without actually falling. That's why we find these things thrilling, because they're intense, powerful, and overwhelming. But we know we're safe. That's why many people like thrill rides. It's why many people like to step into the dreamscape and experience something else, something other, something beyond what we have done before and what we normally can. That's one of the most potent and powerful things about hypnosis. It brings us to new realities. So step with me through these clouds. Feel the pressure build behind you, the building momentum pressing you forward into this experience. Towards roiling storm clouds up ahead and the dreamscape cracks of lightning, unlike anything we've seen before. Because today we go to something different, something intense, something new. You can see it there in the roiling patch of clouds. A ball of lightning crackling and spinning with such intensity, such vividness. The lightning coalescing into a warping, pulsing, glowing white. We're going there. But don't worry. This is just concepts and ideas, places of thought. Even something that looks like this in the dreamscape really is just a metaphor in a way. Dreamscape isn't a place that has physical danger. It's a place that has conceptual danger at the most. The ideas, the experiences here are only real in the sense that we can know them as we know any fiction. Just intensely so. And so with that in mind, let's step into this lightning and feel our reality warp and shift and waver and quaver and spin. Oh my. That's an intense sensation. Of being sucked in, pulled down, compressed, and squeezed, our thoughts coalescing into a single point of experience until suddenly you can feel the weight of gravity again, your feet underneath you. You can see or hear the sound of a long, empty corridor. You can feel the damp air, smell this mildewy concrete, rotten, stale air. Of a bunker, and, of course, the hum of air conditioning units, the click of far-off machinery, a feeling of wetness in the air, and before you is a great bunker door, standing 20 feet tall, massive. Overlapping and interleaved metal panels connecting the components together into one huge sealed piece. Caution markings and an interface console on one side. A singular person stands there. They're wearing a lab coat, carrying a clipboard, an ID card, and of course, a very bland expression. Now, are you sure that you're ready to do this? You know that 11 others before you have tried, and none of them have survived this process. And while we do truly wish to be able to master the control of this artifact, we would like to remind you that in no way will we be responsible if you were to be the 12th. And I know that you're aware of the risks, and certainly others may have succeeded with different artifacts before, but it is not something that we are certain can be done. We had given up testing on sample H8 R3-13 quite some time ago, and to be perfectly frank, I really didn't think anyone would be so brazen as to request an opportunity to attempt mastery of it. That simply hadn't really crossed anybody's mind here at the board in quite some time. And oh. You nodded. You You really are certain this is what you want? Then I'm going to need you to sign here. I know we've already gotten plenty of signatures from you today, but I'm going to need this last one to confirm it. Of course, your benefits package will go to your marked next of kin if things do not go according to plan. He signed the proffered paperwork, quickly and brusquely. The scientist almost seems to cringe a little as you get close to them to touch the clipboard. Well, now that that's taken care of, I will open the chamber and be on my way. We will be leaving a couple of drone assistants to help you out, because, well, quite frankly, I'm not certain that the results are going to be anything other than something that our cleanup crew would describe as viscera. Anyways, I shall be going. And with that, the scientist quickly stabs their ID card into a slot on this ancient terminal next to the door, types in a series of commands, and then scurries off down the hallway with almost a run, it seems. And the great door before you begins to grind and to turn as mechanisms inside swing the massive inset door open and inward. It wasn't designed to stop a blast from this side. It was meant to contain one, as you notice that the walls bevel outward underneath the door. It moves with steady mechanical slowness as you see beyond a dark concrete room, all finished in bare concrete with electrical conduits and I-beams at the sides. It stands 30 feet tall, 30 feet on a side. In the middle is a single stainless steel table, rusted slightly, worn with age. And on the table, in the middle of the room, underneath the light, is what looks to be some strange piece of chitinous material that you can't quite discern every detail about from here. Now, you knew what you were getting yourself into, you told yourself deep down. You take your first step into the room. You can feel the air is dead in here, the first fresh air flowing in from the corridor. There's not a single ventilation shaft inside of this room. It had been completely and totally sealed until it was opened. You can hear on either side of you a faint mechanical hiss as two large guardian robots, each standing 10 feet or so tall, power on, their mechanical forms shifting up onto their haunches, treaded feet-like pads holding them, large autocannons, heavy-duty flamethrower, secondary weapon systems all coming online, glowing lights, mechanical grabbing arms, and the blinking red of a recording light on their cameras as they stare at you with their ominous, mechanical, turret-like heads without moving their bodies at all. And yet you know that in an instant they could reduce you to a fine pink mist if, for some reason, they determined you were a threat. You can feel the intensity in the air as you close on the table, gaining your first true sight of what sits upon it. It's strange. It looks like a helmet, almost, but made from the hide of a giant insect. But it has this strangeness to it, this obsidian black that seems to suck in the light and yet has this glint and this reflectivity that the single light high above glistens off of like a gemstone. The inside of the helmet is down on the table. As you approach closer still, you can hear the great door behind you closing. Massive hydraulics shifting the door into place. The sound of locking pins snicking. Closing, knowing that you only have at most a few hours of air left in this room if you were to become trapped in here for some reason. The finality of the final pin clicking shut as a massive steel shaft slides in place behind you makes you pause for just a moment. Maybe even for a second you contemplate what it might feel like to just tell them that you actually didn't want to come in here, and knowing that they would let you go. It's fine. This was a voluntary assignment. You didn't have to do this. It was purely because you knew, after what you'd seen, that this was the only way that you'd ever be able to face the dangers that you have seen before outside in the world beyond, that this would be the only possibility for you, that no other would suffice. But you could still also just find your end here, just like the stains on the table and the floor suggest many others have before, the red, ruddy color still in the concrete after countless cleanings, the pockmarks on the floor inexplicably chipped, the table rusting underground in a dry room. Strange mildew-like black growing out onto the table. You're right in front of it now. You can see the shape of this strange mantle coming to a spike like a great blade. It's not actually that big. It's only about the size of an ancient medieval helmet with a tail-like entity coming out the back, like a scorpion's tail that flattens down to a single little strand hanging like a braided piece of hair behind it. And it's sitting on the table. You reach your hands out. This is the moment of truth. All you have to do is lift it, place it upon your head, and survive. Just thrive. Know that your will is enough. Know that your thoughts can control what will come pouring into you. You've trained for this. It's not like they don't teach the members of the ORD how to handle all that you face. But you've never done something like this before, never chosen to interact with a sample, let alone something as dangerous as H8R3-13. You go to lift it, only for a clatter as a skull shifts out from underneath it, falling onto the table as you touch the helmet and lift it. Oh, I guess they must have missed something. Oh well. As you pick it up, you can feel the surface of it is so soft, so utterly soft, and yet smooth and slick like rock. It gives gently. It flexes, unlike it should. It looked so rigid before you touched it, but now it's so gentle and soft. You pick it up. The tail-like part droops behind it. You examine it for a moment. The inside, almost impossibly dark, unable to quite make out all the details in the lighting of the room. It looks like the sinews of muscle of a strange ancient creature, and the chitinous armored sections. There's what look like tiny little talon-like protrusions, all sorts of strange objects and forms, reminding one of bone and armor, insect mouths. You pause. No, it has been too much to get here. You'll do this. It's time. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. You're going to do it. And then over the PA, you give a gentle nod, not finding the words that one might normally deliver. As you are too lost in the strangeness of this object, you lift it up, up. Are you ready to begin the test? You feel the tail brush across your collarbone as you lift the helmet up and over your head. And then you bring it down and you just find, oh, how strangely soft it is. It's cold and cool and it's gripping your head. It's grabbing your head. You can feel the tail slither down underneath your shirt, down your back, soft and cold, and it seems to reach out further and further until it reaches the base of your spine, and then a sting! You scream out. You cry out. You couldn't have known just how it would be, because oftentimes there are no video records of what would come next as you fall to the floor, feeling ice in your veins. You're frozen. A feeling of iciness spreads up you. Your vision blurs, ringing your ears. You can't see. Your head feels like it's going to cave in. Your vision turns inky and red and black, and you can feel something. A rage, anger, bitterness, desire, hunger, thoughts without need, a torrent of feeling and intensity. Your body convulses and twitches. You fall to your knees, clutching at your head, trying to tear it away, tear it off, please, get it off of me, get it off. And then everything just winks into darkness as you find that yourself, your body, your mind is black, inky, soft, icy, cold, nothing at all. Nothing to be told. And then the first feelings of wakefulness return, the first sensations of bitter cold. The room is so cold, so utterly cold. And you hate it. You hate it more than anything. The air in here does not smell as it should. Your body twitches and convulses. It is wrong. It should be more. It should have more. Your vision is still strangely empty and blank. You stagger to your feet, feeling something coursing into you, feeling flames and ice and power. You stagger back and forth, you twitch, you feel your arms convulse until you fall again to the floor, feeling your arms rip, and you feel something pulsing and cracking out across you like breaking ice, like nails growing instantly as your whole body shivers, as the coldness recedes, your limbs grow stronger, you claw at the ground, feeling yourself gripping into the concrete, feeling the, ah, that's how it should feel. This is correct. This is as it should feel. You know that this is what you wanted. You grit your teeth and you smile into the darkness until it's yours. This is yours and yours alone. The power. You flex and you feel your whole body shake as it pulses out. For the first moment, you feel what it is to see again, but you do not see. You can feel the room around you. You can feel the dead air inside of it. You can sense the two sentry machines scanning you. You can hear the whine of the small servos inside of them that control and move components. You can sense everything around you, but you do not see. You can feel this yourself dwarfing the table. Now you look down. It does not know. Is this down? to your arms, your hands, they grow. You feel that spiny protrusion that first pierced you, extending out as whip-like snaking components come out beyond you. A tail. That's what this is. It snicks back and forth. You can feel the power in your frame. The table looks like a doll's toy. The room feels smaller. You are ready to eat, but there is nothing here. There is nothing in this room but dark, dead concrete. How could they do this to you? How could they keep you like this? Garbled voice distorts off the rage that is black and glistening inside of you. How dare they keep something so powerful locked up inside like this? You need food more than any time in your life. You feel your mouth drape open, and you relax for a moment as you contemplate what it would be like to sink your teeth into meat, to rip and tear and shred your way through it, to consume until you are gorged upon your prey, and you know where it is. You know what lays beyond this door. You've been here before. You know this entire complex. Yes! And you will have every last bite of food you deserve. Biomass. Biomass. It's what you need. And you hate them for keeping you from it. The voices begged through the intercom for you to stop, to listen. You do not care. The robots lift their arms, their guns trained upon you. And you are angry that they would dare to slow you down. The first shell hits you with force like nothing you've ever experienced. A white lance of icy anger. Not pain, anger that they would dare to shoot you. You surge forward with intensity, feeling your muscles strain as you rake your clawed feet through the concrete floor, lunging across the entire room in seconds to surge up into the machine, slamming it into the wall, grabbing it by its turreted head, lifting it from the ground as the other continues to pump white-hot rage into your backside, your tail extending out against it, spreading, spearing the other behind you. You don't even need to look because you can see everything around you. You can hear everything around you. You smash its body across the room, throwing it into the concrete wall with such force that it cracks into the wall, breaks slightly, crumbling in. Dirt flows into the room, and you feel good. You're angry, but you feel good. They can't stop you. The shells that have exploded in your body mean nothing now. You hulk over this destroyed machine, dropping its crumpled mechanical form, the bent steel and titanium shattered by your strength. And now you confront the door, the despicable object of your rage. But it means nothing. You know it doesn't. You know that you do not care as the heat burns inside of you, as you feel the rage that they have sown in you, blossoming like new growth. You flex, you breathe deeply in, feeling the warmth, the heat, the fire, until with a scream you let it out, and plasma lances forward from your mouth, your jaws. You feel the heat burning, searing joyfully as it cuts into the steel, blossoming in blobs of molten metal, dripping away from the door as you rush towards it, letting this cutting torch of rage pour out of you until it's gone. The door is cut down the middle, but it doesn't fall out of the frame and further infuriates you by daring to stand in your path. You smash into it with all your force, only to be renounced again by this despicable object. And so you smash into it again with both fists, digging your tails into the ground, feeling the strength of sinewed steel cable-like muscles bristling as you shove, tearing with your feet at the concrete until one side begins to give. You back up across the room. You know what you need to do. You give another furious blast of energy from your mouth, feeling the joy destroying this despicable object in your way. You run, you leap, you move with such force, such speed, you smash into the second half of the door, crashing through, launching the massive plate of metal aside, only to be faced by more despicable assailants, more who would dare to keep you from all you want, a simple meal. You have hungered for so long. You know that you had breakfast this morning, but that's not what you mean, not what you care about, not one bit. You're hungry. And they shoot. Shells explode. Fire lances out. You dodge to the side, jumping off the wall, bounding on all fours, feeling your form blasted, struck shells bouncing off of plated chitinous carapace, feeling yourself flow up the hallway, smashing machine after machine, feeling your table lance out and smash, throwing yourself through them, shoulder-checking, tackling, leaping as you work your way towards the elevator shaft, the one that you know they will seal, the one that they will desperately try to keep you at the bottom of, that they will flood with acid, that they will pour horrible things down into here. They will stop you, and you will not have it. You know there is another way. The other way that they don't think you'll take. The staircase, because it also has doors, but you fake them. You smash the cameras as you go, throwing bits and components of machinery into cameras, carefully making your advance of carnage and destruction straight towards the elevator until you smash the last camera and you veer off, sprinting with such speed now, not even trying to destroy, knowing you must be smarter, you must be faster, you must not get caught in your rage, I must not get caught in the carnage that feels so good, the power that feels so good. And you leap, smashing through a door to just smash into that staircase, to burst forth and to begin climbing it. One flight at a time isn't enough. You leap up, climbing across the inside of the staircase, bounding off walls, picking up momentum, and still you go, and still you climb, until you can see the closing door up ahead. They figured out your plan. They wish to stop you. You can see acid begin to drip in from ports. You must go faster. You mustn't be stopped now. Not now. Not when you're so close to a meal, the first meal. In more eons than you can remember. They wouldn't dare. You bolt up further, feeling your tail smashing against things as you thrash your way up, carefully leaping from part to part, from component to component, feeling that gleeful, reckless abandon of destruction, decimation, crashing through the door at the top now, and into the hallway, where there are so many machines, all barreling down on you, some bipedal, others on treads, all coming straight towards you. You don't have time for their despicably stupid tactics. They don't stand a chance. You breathe in. You fill yourself with the rage, power, the desire, and you let loose again another screeching blast that tears through everything in your path. You watch as machines cave in two into molten, dribbling piles, as ammunition cooks off, as machines break, and you bolt through the carnage, through the wall you cut a hole in behind them. You burst forward onto desert plains, into the dusty, dark evening air, and you run. You hear the sound of a rotary autocannon spin up. You redouble your speed. Faster still, you can hear the sound of impacts, the crack of fire, the buzz of the guns. And you run faster and faster, dropping to all fours into a loping sprint, your tail stabilizing you, flowing across the ground like quicksilver, blinking through space, shells blasting the ground behind you. Next to you, you dodge an explosion. Now, just a few more things to get past. That minefield, that annoying, despicable minefield. You run through it. You leap across the vast majority of it, landing on a section of mines, only to be blown into the air to feel more anger at all of these inconveniences on your path out. And so you continue faster still, into the darkness of the desert night, running across rocks and boulders, headed towards one place that you remembered nearby. There was a farm. There were cattle. They could be food. They just needed a meal. So you do make it to these great expanses, these empty fields, and you finally get a chance to eat something that you know isn't sentient, because while you might have been angry that they would try to deny you what you needed, you weren't willing to let them prove you were the monster they claimed. You just needed a meal, and you gorge yourself on that, feeling a crack in the distance. You jerk your head up to look around. Nothing, no one, for over 100 miles in this great expanse of prairie land, except for the crack again of lightning in the distance. Great storm clouds gathering in a massive thunderhead have come over the mountains. You continue till you finally begin to feel sated as the rain rolls in. You relax for a moment before remembering that they'll be looking for you. What to do next? You can smell the air, thick delightful scent of petrichor. You can feel the warm rain begin to drip and drop on your flesh, on your carapace. You examine your body for the first time, truly seeing how it's changed. Armored, exoskeleton-like, hunched, easy to run on all fours, and yet still bipedal, still having hands. Delicate fingers clad with blackened, hardened, chitinous claws that pull back into your hands, freeing your fingers. Such elegance. You breathe in, feeling how you can take in so much air now. You look at the remains of your meal, amazed at how much you've just consumed. You breathe in deeply, rocking back onto your haunches, letting your splitting of tails support you, as for the first time you realize that you did it. And you relax into the rain, listening, still able to hear so much, even with the patter of it, still able to feel everything around you, so far away. There's nobody around, just the soft, warm rain. And it still feels good. It feels amazing. The chitinous armor still has that strange softness to it, an almost cushion-like quality of flexibility. And so there you are, relaxing in the rain. The faint crack of lightning in the distance. Breathing, relaxing, feeling yourself pulling back out of that intense lightning ball in the dreamscape. Finding yourself calm once more. Freed from the intensity of that experience, seeing the thunderclouds receding into that ball of lightning, watching as the dreamscape calms, just as you have, leaving behind all that was other than as a memory of an experience that we shared together, knowing what it's like to master H8R3-13. The 12th subject did survive. And that is quite an experience. Now, why don't you all take a moment to just breathe in nice and deep. Relax for a little moment. Stretch your bodies. And let yourself slowly drift out of the dreamscape and back towards reality with each passing breath. Giving yourself calmness, relaxation, wonderful, and total. Knowing that everything we've done was left as the concept it was behind, that you can take that memory with you of that experience and intensity, but that nothing was ever in danger and that you're safe. Breathing in and out. I'll give you a nice little count to help you find your way back to reality. 1. Drifting up. 2. More and more. 3. Slipping out of the dreamscape. 4. 5. Feeling so wonderfully alive. 6. 7. And 8. And 9. And wide awake for me, feeling wonderful and refreshed. Thank you so very much for listening. If you'd like to hear more of my interesting adventures into the dreamscape, there's plenty of places you can find me.